who have come to life for us in language.
Absolutely. It feels like something is rescued.
Say that again.
It feels like something was rescued.
Rescued.
Yes.
Yeah.
When language does that sought-after thing.
You said at the beginning that when you were working on this book, you had a thought about writing a kind of intellectual autobiography. And that stuck with me because throughout this book, there are so many aphorisms. I made a note that I always write when I'm reading a book like this. I wrote that there's wisdom on every page. This book is a feast of wisdom, and it's gleaned from these very difficult lives. So one way of, maybe in the few minutes we have left in our conversation, is just to highlight one or two of them and you can comment on them. I don't know if they're yours or whether they're...
They're rarely mine.
So here's one of them. I think happiness is an encounter. It's a kind of blessing.
Oh, that might have been mine.
I think happiness is an encounter. It's a kind of blessing. Mm-hmm. How do you understand that?
You know, originally for a long time, this novel was called The Happiness of the Many. I was thinking about what that means. And I did think, because for those, you know, with Do Not Say We Have Nothing and Dogs at the Perimeter, it holds some of the worst things we do to one another. And I felt that I wanted to write about that thing that we fight so hard to keep alive, that thing that we go through such difficult things to preserve, not just for ourselves, but for others. Maybe that's the most important part, too. And I wanted to think about these threads of happiness. And throughout this novel, they feel it. At times, they don't expect to feel it. They feel they belong to this world, and they're not going to give that, even if they have to continuously make that belonging for themselves and others. Since that's they're not willing to let that thread die. But you have to feel it and love it and long for it to want to keep it alive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There are so many, but I'll just pick one or two more. One way or another, Bento said to my father, your child inherits your life, so let her inherit a true thing, not a false thing. Isn't that the least a father should do? Wow.
Yes, that was me, I'm afraid.
That was me. I keep picking yours.
It's a brutal thing, he says to the father. But it's something I think in that moment the neighbor Mento thinks that the father needs to hear, because the father has a story he needs to tell his daughter, and he must tell it to her before she begins the rest of her journey. Yeah.
Did you have that experience in your own life?
Interesting. I don't know. I don't think I've ever felt that anyone owed me a story. I think in this case the father does.
Oh, the story.
To Lena, yeah. In my life...
Did your father owe you a story? I mean, I'm being very presumptuous now.
No.
Very personal, but...
No, I love listening to Misa talk about your grandmother, because I would say maybe almost have the inverse, which was the... Everything was said without language. Everything was said, and probably one of the reasons I wanted to write, or felt compelled somehow, was giving a shape to some of these silences, giving a shape to them. I don't know, there's a kind of tenderness, I think, in... It's a form of listening. I really have always felt, and I think you were sort of saying this too, that writing really is this form of deep listening.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe one more, and then we'll... this one touched me, because when two people meet in conversation, Each surrenders their weapons to the other.
Ah, that's Carl Jaspers.
Who is that?
Carl Jaspers. Yes.
When two people meet in conversation, each surrenders their weapons to the other. I felt that so far with the two of you, that you've surrendered your weapons, and I hope I have too. That's a wonderful phrase about it, you know, how we become vulnerable to each other.
What real conversation actually is, when we really are meeting each other in that place. We lay down our weapons.
It's just a great phrase. Let's bring the two of you together, and maybe we can start. Do you have a question of Kinesio?
How do you do it? And you know when you're reading a book and you're like, did a human being of our time write this? I mean, it comes full force from, it holds so many times.
Surrender. Yeah. It's actually giving up control. And refusing to sequester even what I have learned would be expected or acceptable. So I feel as though I want the thing I write to reveal me to myself. I feel newly that there's something I've learned. But it is a kind of surrender. And I feel that state. And that's when I know I've arrived at something. You know, I can't, if I see it from the beginning, I begin to distrust it. I think that's kind of it. But how do you do it?
I don't know that I did. I don't know.
Who else was there?
It's good. Okay. Here we come. I think that thing of just a feeling the need to keep going back to the well to see, because I also need to drink, and also I wonder, like I That speaks to me when you say surrender. I also feel like when I first turned to writing, I so much wanted to leave myself. And I think it's going to take 40-50 years to return to figure out how to write with myself. I still feel like I'm kind of trying to leave myself.
40 or 50 years from now?
Now it's been like almost 40 years ago. No, that's not right. But it's been a long time. I don't know. I do feel, as I'm starting a new book now, I'm starting to write something now, like back at the beginning all over again, like I have no idea how to do this thing.
It's a chronic condition, I'm afraid.
Feel the same.
Absolutely. It was like, why, not only I don't know how to do this, but also you have to talk yourself into why you do it all over again. It's not as though you're not aware. It seems that there's something that presses on a reset button when you get to the end of a work, and you have to get to know language all over again, because then you might risk just reproducing the same extant material, without that reset button having to be pressed. And so I just embrace the chronic condition, and then I go and get some acupuncture.
Other questions between the two of you? I have lots, so I can almost keep going.
Yeah, give us your questions. Right. We don't want to be Patrick, to be Eric, sorry. Eric Friesen. No relation to Patrick Friesen.
Distantly.
Distantly.
Yeah. Very good. He's a good guy. This is really for both of you, in a way. This is from your book, Hannah, talking about Hannah Arendt, remembered how in Paris among their friends, they, meaning she and her husband, Heinrich, had been raucous as if argument could exalt them. Now she and Heinrich had become like two chairs whose existence made a room possible. He had shown her that four walls, a home in other words, was not anchored to a building or a place. It could be made of time. It could be made of something as intangible as a promise. So, my question is, I asked you this question 7 years ago, where is home? And you said you didn't know. So I ask you again, I'll ask you to, where is home? For Madeline Tien.
I think it's with the people we love. I mean, I would say my home is Rawi. But I have been thinking a lot about home lately, and the loss of home, and destructions of home, and disappearances of homes. And every time I lay down in bed at night, I can't believe I have these four walls and a ceiling and a bed. I will be able to sleep through the night. I feel like I appreciate what that means for each of us. It's hard to think about home without thinking of other people's homes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about you, Chris?
I very much agree. But somehow, every time I think, or maybe it's not me thinking, but when I'm forced to think about home being presented with such questions, I always want to make home an abstraction. And that's because I think every thought I might gather around this idea will be too limiting. So I like to think of home as home is living. Home is where life happens. And with those we love, and with those with whom we can be complete in our complex, flawed selves. And right now, in this world is so fractured, and in a kind of fibrous, disheveled state, that even the concept of home is unstable. And that's for all of us. And that was clear to me, for instance, when Hurricane Sandy made it out to New York, for instance. And you know, in the ways that meaning and language itself or themselves are contested ground. All of these things in which life happens. And I think more broadly, there's an entire ecosystem that we risk losing, which is the entire planet and its human and non-human inhabitants, because of all of the catastrophic things that are happening simultaneously all over.
One more question, then we'll take questions from the audience. There's a question that this is a I want to get this right. This is a question that Henry James, the novelist, got put to him by his cousin. He had a very active correspondence with his cousin Minnie. And in one of the letters to Henry James, she says, she asks him this question, tell me something you know to be true. So that is my last question to each of you. Tell me something you know to be true.
Oh.
I feel like you should answer that question first.
Yeah.
Eric.
I'm not the one on the stage.
I feel like I know that Kinesia's statement just now is true.
And that's too true. I mean, what's true, we're here together, and that's certainly a good thing in the world.
Okay.
Hold that up and celebrate that. That's true.
Yeah, it is true. Absolutely. How about you?
I don't know that I can add to that. Yes.
Okay. I asked Ian McEwen this question in Italy this summer, and he dodged and fainted and back and forth, and finally he said, there is no such a thing as closure. That was his answer. There is no such thing as closure. And, you know, just one of those questions that I'd like to ask people from time to time. So, but now it's your turn, ladies and gentlemen. We have a microphone up here. We're going to bring it to the center. Please line up in an orderly fashion. And you can ask a question of either one of these two wonderful writers or both of them. Who will be first? Who will be first? Okay. Very good.
Hi, good evening. Yes, I am also an author at this festival. My name is Therese. Thank you so much for your time, Kinesia and Madeline. My question is, both of your books, your recent books, engage in some way or form with the speculative, with sort of like the fantastic and the near future. And I was just wondering what it was like for you both personally and and artistically to engage in that kind of literary landscape. Like, was it something different for you? Was it something that felt like easy or interesting? Just what it was like. Thank you.
Thank you, Therese. Nice to see you. And congratulations on the book. Yes. So that's a good question. I think I have a rather simple response, because I probably know this to be true. I think all writing is speculative. Perhaps even maybe just outside of the manual that you get when you buy like a piece of furniture and you have to read it to figure out how to put it together. Outside of that functional language, what we tend to think of as creative writing, I think it's always a speculative endeavor. Because in a sense, we're going after the possibility of meaning, of, you know, aesthetic expression, of what it means to look deeply at ourselves, and what that means for looking beyond us. So there's always an attempt that we can call speculative in writing. So I didn't feel any exceptional way with working in that vein. Now, if we're talking about the fantastic, that's the language I grew up in. Like, with my grandmother, the folk tales, the folk songs, those stories, they were all in the vein of the fantastic. There were fables, there were folklore, and the world makes sense to me that way, actually. Sometimes more so than what we think of as realism. Because I find there's a lot about realism that is unbearable, and in a way that realism is, that it can condemn itself in a kind of rigid reproduction of something that gets in the way of that possibility that I'm talking about when we go after possibility with speculation. So that's kind of where I sit with it. It's a good question. Think about it some more.
That's a really good question. I agree with what you're saying about realism, and I had been thinking over the last few years when I was teaching that a lot of in our contemporary culture, a lot of literary fiction is built from literary fiction. Like it's like the world being created is from the world that was already created, and it's just like this continuously pulling on this thread repetitively. And then the world outside seems to be retreating. So I kind of feel the same when I was writing in a speculative way. It felt like trying to just it felt real to me. I think what I found really difficult is the fable part of it, because I struggled with metaphor simply as metaphor. I was trying to understand what my metaphor was and what it was doing and allowing me not to do. I was troubled by metaphor. Yeah.
Thank you for that question. Now, yes, we have.
My question is, like, censorship as authors subject to censorship. And Madeline was saying about basically religious censorship. The pillars tell you have to think this way, and you're not thinking this way, you have to change your ways. And for Kinesia, black history has been sort of obliterated over the years, and it's been rewritten, I'm going to say, in the words of white people. How do you feel censorship has affected both of your works?
Of the times in which we live, or the kinds of slogans that will make a thought simply close in on itself. I don't know how to answer this question. I mean, I want to say that I don't feel censored.
I was thinking about the character, the pillars, the person, and basically this is what you should think.
It's Baruch Spinoza in a Jewish enclave in Amsterdam, and part of that constriction of belief is the fear of the community to shelter a heretic within the community, and what danger that might put them in, but also that survival that is the survival by purifying in a sense. So it's a very difficult and complex place that he's in. Yeah, for him to sort of belong and also question.
I think similar to what Maddie was just saying, that questions of censorship have to do with a corruption of power, right? And I certainly write in a tradition that is critically aware of the importance of always having an analysis of power. I think in the absence of an analysis of power, tyrannies thrive, and which is why it's so dangerous how most societies, if not the entire Western world and elsewhere, has been indoctrinated into this, what else can you call it but belief, that there is such a thing as being apolitical. The people who occupy these positions of power, who then forward these ideologies of censorship and, wanting the only surviving record of history in our lives to be the tyrants, they love it when people say they're not political. You know, because we live in a political world. Therefore, we need to have political consciousness. And so, like, the tradition that I am part of, writing in the Black radical tradition, truly, is one that is constantly putting that pressure on having an analysis of power. Because if we don't have that, then we miss a big piece of the puzzle. And it is a puzzle because these levers that are pulled in these high offices and these institutions that structure our lives inside of social and cultural spaces, and who will, they will not avoid coming into your bedroom if they have to, as we know they've done that, you know, dictate who you can marry, who you can't marry, who, you know. They thrive on the ignorance of the masses, and especially political ignorance. And so I was raised to speak the truth no matter what. And in that sense, art has to articulate the true thing, right? Or the many true things. And so I don't actually carry any anxiety about doing that. I don't censor myself, and I don't. I don't think there's a place in art for censorship. If that's what it is, then it's just propaganda.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes.
Take your glasses off so I can't see you, so I'm not as nervous. Thank you both for your words. They were very inspiring and very thought-provoking. I was just wanting to ask both of you if you were always confident in the book you were going to produce, or if you ever had doubts, and if you did have doubts about what you were producing, what you were writing, how did you get past that?
I'm still not pressed.
I don't know, but there's always doubt.
Always doubt.
Always. I think it's a complex negotiation, actually, between a lot of doubt and a little less doubt. And so you're constantly going through this motion. But it's really trusting the work. Like I was saying earlier, it's that sense of surrender. Once I reach that, I feel something transcendent has happened. And then I feel I can trust that. Which is not to say that, you know, the thing doesn't have its failures and its flaws. And actually, sometimes it's even more interesting for its failures and its flaws. But it's really just reaching for the true expression of the thing, whatever that is, you know. And so I feel actually quite confident in doubt, if that makes sense.
It does, yes.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me they're like living things. So in a way, there's doubt, but it's not. It's something else. It's that sometimes when I'm working on it, I feel like it understands itself, but I don't understand it. And this is just this long process of me learning to see what this living thing is. And I'm each time you, it is like a plant, each time you touch it, it moves. It just, it does something else.
It takes on a life of its own.
Yes, and then it'll blossom something incredible that you never intended, which you then have, sometimes, yeah, it's, I don't know, you follow it. I mean, I think that's what is exciting about the doubt is you, I don't necessarily doubt it.
No.
I sometimes doubt my own ability to see it.
Yeah.
And it's a lot about persistence. I feel like it's just persistence. You just keep looking.
Yeah. Those are the perfect words. It really does feel like there's a fully formed thing that you keep grasping at. And it's okay not to be sure what that is. Because the making of the work is how you get to know it. And then you bring that intimacy onto the page. You know? Yeah. That's exactly it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have time for one more question before we wrap up. Anyone? Yes.
Creating so many thoughts in my brain. But so I want to know how long it took you to write your book and how long it took you to write. And did you have a lot of pre kind of little drafts that you were kind of, or did you just get that inspiration and write the chapters? Like, and your book is very unusual, so I haven't read it, but I look forward to reading it, and your book is. So that's my question. I think mine, it did take the full 9 years. I can't quite say why exactly, but I do think it's when I was writing like 5 different novels. But I knew in my heart they were one, and trying to understand why that was important to me or why they were coming from the same source just took me a really long time. And for like a lot of writers, I had a full-time job, so just trying to find that concentrated space was a challenge. Yeah.
Did you write at night then? Like set aside times, of course.
Early mornings. Yeah, that's when I'm the most. What did you say? Yes. I'm that little voice that doubt actually gets stronger from you as the day wears on. But in the morning, it hasn't woken yet.
That's funny. So the very first, the oldest story in here was written in 2008, but I didn't have this book in mind. And then there were about 10 more that were written in that interregnum between 2008 and let's say 2014. About 11 of them, and then the book appeared, you know, as a project, and I spent about 2 years drafting the rest. That's not an answer.
Thank you for that.
You both inspired me to keep writing.
Excellent.
Thank you for your question.
And I'm going to Sarah to come up and wind us up. But all I will say is thank you to these two wonderful writers, and buy the books.
Thank you so much, Eric, Madeline, and Kinesia, for this unique and provocative conversation. I truly feel like I am 20% smarter just from having And thank you to everybody in the audience for coming to this event. We want to know about your experience here, so please log on to our online survey, which you can find at kingstonwritersfest.ca. You can please join our authors in the foyer to get your books signed. If you don't already have their books, You need to run out and buy them at our festival bookstore. And this is so exciting because this is just the beginning. So we hope to see all of you very often over the next few days. Thank you so much.
And you just, let me turn this up a little bit here. You just heard from an unaired event from Kingston Writers Fest overall event last fall. This from a September 18th event. Again, 2025. The event was called Resistance and Refuge, and you heard a conversation between moderator Eric Friesen and authors Madeline Tien and Kenesia Lubrin. And if you were tuned in from the top of the show at 4 o'clock, you realize this was about a 90-minute conversation and reading, and I ran it straight through the hour and did not interrupt. Current time, it is just turning 36 minutes after 5 o'clock, and you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We do stream live as well every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock at www.cfrc.ca. Again, just a reminder that every week I upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com, and they do remain there for 3 years. And I usually get that done about 7 o'clock after I get home this evening and every Friday. Just a short mention, I recorded 10 events in total at Kingston Writers Fest this past fall. And I believe this is the fifth of those that I've aired. So there are still, you're still going to be hearing more from that over the course of the next few weeks, on and off. Intermittently, I will be bringing in, there are book launches happening now and open mics, and so I want to stay current with all of that as well, but I'll bring these in from time to time. Before we move on, I'd like to just extend my heartfelt thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to this first 90 minutes or even more than that with me talking, so maybe closer to 100 minutes of the show. And an equal thanks to Kingston Writers Fest, their staff and volunteers, and to all of those who were part of this featured event this afternoon. I will mention see if I need to say anything about this. I do have some announcements to take us through in the next hour, and also I'm going to end with a song. But what I will do is, before we move fully into that, there were some things I probably could have aired, that just announcements that didn't get a chance to air in the first hour. So let's do this quick, and then I'll be right back.
Greetings, loved ones. This is DJ Nasty Nexus coming to you live and direct from CFRC 101.9. I'm here to bring you the goods from my new show, Classless Radio, airing every Friday night at 11 p.m. I'll be giving you hits and hidden gems all the way from jazz to blues and hip-hop and R&B. Music from the soul that everybody needs. Hop on my wavelengths and get right with the kid to kick off your big weekend. Stay tuned. I try my best just to be
a man. Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
Thank you. Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM.
And welcome back again. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And welcome back now just a little more officially into the tail end, actually, at this point of this second hour. And I had mentioned I'm going to share a few calls for submissions. If I can find my list here, where to go? Ah, that's what fell on the floor. There we go. From my list, I'm going to share a few calls for submissions. I don't have a lot of time today because I'm going to play a nice, relatively long piece of music at the end to end the show. And I'll introduce that. It'll take a minute or so to introduce that as well. So what I'm going to do are the things that are most present. I guess that's as good a word as anything. So there are some calls for submissions that are more quickly coming up than some of the others. So I'm going to read the first three. One of them is an application deadline is February 20th at 6 p.m. for the TK Fringe. So that's Theatre Kingston's Fringe Festival. The festival itself will run August 6th through the 16th, but between now and then you need to get your applications in, and after that there will be a lottery drawing to see which acts in will happen in August. I think the lottery poll I read is around February 22nd, so that's coming up right after, really, the deadline. So deadline is February 20th, 6 p.m. Apply www.theaterkingston.com/about-the-TK-fringe. And another call for submissions is Tower Poetry for their summer issue. They are celebrating their 75th anniversary in 2025-26. And they do put out each year two poetry anthologies. Deadlines are February 28th for their summer issue, and they also have one August 31st for their winter issue. But right now we're talking about the February 28th deadline. And if you're interested, go to towerpoetry.ca/submissions. And the last call that I'm going to mention is Assembly Press. Their open submission period, actually, this isn't a deadline. It actually opens March 1st. I'm just giving you a heads up about that, I guess, at this point. I'll give you the link to their submission deadlines, but I do want to point out this is for fiction and fiction only. Their reading periods are, for fiction, March and September, and these are month-long open periods, so March and September. For nonfiction, April and October, and for poetry, May and November. So the call for submissions coming open March 1st is for fiction, and assemblypress.ca/submissions. So we should get you to where all the information you need, and also their call for their call guidelines. Coming up yet this evening, let's move into events. It's Walks of Life Open Mic. This is a monthly series, second Friday night of the month. And It's created and hosted by Abby Louise. I'm going to read from their poster. This is the last thing I've seen from them, so I'll just use that and assume it's current. And it says, this is a non-judgmental space open to all ages and walks of life to listen to or share music, poetry, short stories. It says, those interested or those participating will have 5 to 15 minutes to share. And I think a lot of that just depends on how many show up and want to participate. The doors do open at 7. It runs from 7:30 to 9 p.m. It's at Next Church, which is at 89 Colburn Street here in Kingston. Coming up tomorrow evening, it's called Common Language, a poetry reading and coffee bar. It's going to feature, I'm just going to read from their media release. It says, join us at the Grains and Goods Coffee Bar, Studio 330 West End Wellness, for an evening of poetry, music, connection, and it says damn good coffee. So there you go. Featuring poetry from Liz Huntley Yentz, Calista Markotich, and actually I'm also going to be reading there. There will be music provided by a friend of Liz's, Daniel Buckstag, who will be on bass. There's no cover. Doors open at 6:30. Coffee bar open for beverages and treats. This is located at 851-855 Norwest Road in Kingston. It's just actually right next to the Cat Center. I think it's pretty much across from one of the buses stop, I think. Anyway, it's right there. Again, 855 Norwest Road in Kingston. Doors open at 6:30, and the reading and a bit of music will happen from 7 to 9. Also, let's see where I'm at for time. A guy can do another one. There's a Monday evening series here in Kingston at Crave Cafe. It's put on by Anna Johnson. It's a Monday evening workshop series. It's weekly. And it says this creation is inspired by the work of Stephen Guppy, Gregory Orr, and Sense Writing, and is a free writing workshop held weekly Monday evenings for beginners or advanced writers alike. Those tend to write with prompts, may read their writing if they want to do so. And so this is coming up, Crave Cafe, 166 Princess Street, Kingston. The next one coming up is this coming Monday from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. It's February 16th. And let's see, I think I can do one more here because this is coming up the following night. Tuesday, Quirks of Human Nature. It's the third Tuesday of the month series by Deb Shermans, and Meg Freer. Featured poet is Wanda Pramsma. Music, Ben Hicklin. And bonus poets will be Joel Giroux and Carolyn Kenyons. Deb Sherman is on piano, of course, also co-MC. This is held at the Timeout Bar and Bistro, and that's located at 167 Kingston. And it runs from 7:30 to 9:30. Let's see if, no, I don't think I've got time to do any more. Anyway, I better stop there to make sure I've got time to close out. I will come back to this if I do find out that what I have set up to do doesn't take quite as long as I thought. So anyway, I do have another set of recorded announcements to share with you. So these are short. Let's just do this, and I'll be right back. Here we go.
In Kingston.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic, and 7:30 in Newfoundland.
Partners in Mission Food Bank could not exist without the loyalty, dedication, and support of volunteers, some of whom have been with us for over 30 years. Our team of volunteers consists of individuals who continually devote both their time and skills on a regular basis in an effort to make a positive impact on hunger and the food needs of the community. Volunteering has no age limits. Your commitment and energy is enough. It is a great way to make new friends and contribute to your community. Partners in Mission Food Bank volunteers provide essential services in many ways, including assembling daily hampers, sorting food donations, breaking down and portioning bulk items, packing eggs into cartons, keeping the warehouse safe and clean, and providing helpful input to other volunteers and staff. Interested in volunteering with Partners in Mission Food Bank? Please call our volunteer coordinator at 613-544-4100.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licht in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licht in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
And again, here with the mic, let's see if I can adjust here. That might be better. You are listening to Finding a Voice again. It is 51 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock, so we're getting very close now to the end of the show. And first of all, I'd again like to thank all of you for having tuned in today. Also, again, to all at Kingston Writers Fest who made the event you heard for the first 90 minutes of this show happen this past year. And thank you again to all of you who have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Again, we are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And I don't want to forget, I've mentioned it a couple of times already, kind of interspersed one time very early that I wouldn't normally mention, but I will mention it again since I'm closing out the show at this point or close to it. Just my usual mention, just a reminder that every week I do upload both hours of this show to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Those do remain there for at least 3 years. I usually get that uploaded just before 7 o'clock after I get home. And yeah, so you should be able to find it there again. And they're fairly easy to kind of figure out what you're going to hear. If you just go to the blog space, check it out and see if you have any ideas that might help me make it easier for you. Let me know. How's that? Also coming up right at the top of the hour, please do stay tuned for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. Great show. And I hope to catch you here next week. So to take us out today, I was in a place yesterday where the music they were playing there reminded me of an artist I became familiar with actually a bit later than well into their start of their career. It was like maybe 2007, after he'd already been performing at least since the late 80s, maybe even early 90s. The artist is Moby, and I have one of his CDs called Moby Songs in 1993 to 1998. I'm going to play a track off it called Into the Blue, which also featured some of his songs on that album. Did have vocalists as well. This one did feature singer Mimi Gazy, and that song originally was on Moby's Everything Is Wrong album that was released in 1999. Again, I hope all of you have a great week. Here is Moby with Into the Blue. Here we go.